Welcome to The More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we call it, real debate without the hate. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a moderate Democrat living in Los Angeles, and my drink of choice tonight is a nice, light Chardonnay from Trader Joe's on the butter label.
Hi there, I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia. I am your conservative libertarian for the evening, and I'm sticking with my usual Fireball cinnamon whiskey.
Hi, I'm Emily Brewer. I'm a moderate Republican from Virginia, or as everybody likes to call me, their favorite rhino, and I'm sipping on a great red wine tonight.
I'm Greg Matuszak, your liberal Democrat tonight from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I am drinking dang! Exclamation mark, butterscotch root beer.
Don't forget, man.
Butterscotch root beer, which just I'm going for the diabetes for the group.
And I'm Cliff Dunn. I'm a Republican from Virginia, and my drink of choice today is a Woodchuck hard cider.
Beautiful.
Mm. And while I resist a Wilford Brimley impression for Greg, I want to let everyone know that we have 8,000 downloads a week. A More Perfect Union may be the fastest growing political podcast on iTunes. And if you keep on downloading it and tell your friends too, we'll grow. So we can also be found on YouTube and iHeartRadio. And you can find our website with blogs and commentary at moreperfectunionpodcast.com.
So, an eventful week. I kind of predicted last week that these last 2 weeks before Labor Day were going to be key weeks of the campaign, and certainly a lot has happened. Let's start with Gentleman Trump.
You know it's a bad week for Donald Trump when you get Ann Coulter angry at you.
And she never lets up.
Yeah, and it's really sad with timing of her book this week that's coming out.
Yeah, she spoke so glowingly about him.
But did you hear about Trump's book scandal?
Oh, the one where he was giving away copies and then trying to get to the top of the New York Times bestseller list?
Yes. So what Trump apparently did was, they're speculating he used campaign cash to buy his book to put it back to the top of the New York Times bestseller list. So, you know, I guess he's trying to preemptively beat out Anne.
Right. And he was giving away, he gave away like, what, 5,000 copies at the RNC in the goodie bags or whatever they call them. And
hey, so I didn't get that goodie.
Oh, really?
I didn't get one in my goodie bag.
No.
Oh, well.
I have Make America Great Again tumblers.
And now I'm just feeling left out.
So this week, Donald Trump tried to reset his campaign yet again. I've lost count. Does anybody know how many resets he's had?
It's about number 50 at least.
And this week it was on the topic of his immigration policy. Donald Trump famously has called for a deportation force to remove 11 million or more what he calls illegal immigrants from the country. This week he did a 180 on that, said, oh, that's ridiculous. How could you ever possibly do that? No, we have to do something that's much more compassionate. So he's decided that only the clear convicted felons are going to be removed, as if that's not already U.S. policy. And he's going to start first hour of his administration. He himself is going out in a blue uniform to round up people.
Yeah. So the big question now, and I think this comes when any time you have a politician have a policy change like this, is this a flip-flop, which we hate flip-flops, or is this an evolution on a thought? Or is this, you know, is he changing and evolving in his thoughts? But this is such a dramatic change. What do you guys feel?
Cliff, I think that's a question for Cliff, since he's sort of
Cliff.
He's sort of the Trump person on the podcast. It's a flip-flop, okay.
No, you know what I think it is, a flip-flop, that's cool. But you know what I think the problem really is here is that before now, I don't think Trump truly ever listened to his counsel. And I think that's the biggest issue. I think he hasn't educated himself. He's been doing rallies across the country and, you know, just spewing all these ideas that he just thinks can happen without the benefit of actually listening to policy advisors or policy wonks on a direction and a possibility or what's already in place, because he has no clue.
This was the one thing Trump was banging on from day one, basically. Well, actually, literally from day one. And the fact that he's willing to swing around on it suggests to me that his new advisors had something of a come to Jesus talk with him, which I think people had been expecting to see for some time now.
Yeah, but we talked about this last week. Will this affect the people who have been with him from day one, this kinder, gentler, not saying what's on his mind, Trump? Will that hurt his true base?
I think there's a very real limit on how much it can hurt his true base because of what the alternative is. I mean, let's face it, even if his diehard people are not happy with this stance or that stance, those people definitely do not want Hillary Clinton in the White House.
I tend to agree with Cliff. And you know, I think the other issue here is that, you know, obviously the folks that were staunch on immigration, they still like, you know, how he is on this no BS kind of talking situation. They like that he kind of just spews hot rhetoric. And I think that they're willing to make any amendments possible because he truly has a almost sickening cult following. So I don't think this is really going to do any damage to his base.
Cliff, she just referred to you as sickening cult following, and I think she
I'm going to take the presumption that she was referring to the people who you were trying not to invite on this show.
You mentioned the word sham, and I think that that's a good transition word, a good segue to Mrs. Clinton's campaign.
Well, before we go that, do you know how popular she really is?
How popular?
How popular is she? You're supposed to say how popular. Neoconservatives are even thinking about voting for it. I think there's a whole, like, website, neoconservative.
Oh, the discredited idiots who let us into Iraq?
Yes.
That's a whole wing of the Republican Party.
I mean, Paul Wolfowitz endorsing Clinton or something like that?
Yes, he even said
that's
in an
not
interview
exactly a ringing endorsement.
I will say that hearing Paul Wolfowitz's decision actually made me rethink my decision for about a day or two. I'm not kidding. I have always said I'll be one of the last six Americans who thinks the liberation of Iraq in 2003 was the right thing to do. We're not quite there yet, but I know we will. It's inevitable. When Paul Wolfowitz said that when it got out that Paul Wolfowitz was going to vote for Clinton, and I'm one of the very few people left who actually admires him and who think he is an admirable public servant, the fact that he was willing to vote for Clinton actually made me rethink my position for a while. So there may be very, 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 very few of us, and I'll acknowledge that I myself am the neoconservative wing of the Libertarian Party all by myself, or maybe the feather. But the fact of the matter is that our people, few of us as there are, who do admire Paul Wolfowitz, and it is a sign of how badly the Trump campaign has gone off the rails, that he feels compelled to vote for a party that has essentially got back into power criticizing the very thing that he wanted to do, which was to build a stable, democratic, and pro-America Iraq, which I still think was a noble effort.
I've got to ask DJ one question, and you know, I'm going to make a revelation to you guys that I am probably going to vote for Trump. And
wow, okay.
That's pretty big for me. Okay. So, Cliff, I hope you enjoyed that. DJ, don't have a heart attack.
Thank you.
But,
I'm face-bombing. I'll just face-bomb for the rest of the show.
We're going to ask you to elaborate
But I want to ask a question of DJ first. So, you know, I know people say it's a throwaway vote, it's a protest vote, it is what it is. But if you're not picking between Hillary and Donald Trump, it is a throwaway vote. Because this guy will never reach the threshold to get into a debate, first of all. Second of all, I mean, this guy, the two things that I just can't get down with is, you know, I'm pro-life to a degree. And he's pretty pro-abortion, which I'm really not down with. And then on top of that, he just wants to end the Department of Education. No plan, no idea forward, but he just is flat on any Department of Education with no path forward. So, you know, I am trying to understand what you do like about him.
Okay.
And we're talking about Gary Johnson, right?
Yes, we're talking about Gary Johnson.
I wanted to make that clear for the audience.
First of all, I would challenge you and the rest of this panel to show how the Federal Department of Education has actually advanced government monopoly schooling in this country, let alone education as a whole. Very difficult to show. Secondly, we have to remember that it was not as if the federal government had no role in education prior to the creation of the department in 1978. Those of us who are, in fact, a little older than you are, Emily, would know that there was a Department of Health, Education, and Welfare that had been in place long before Jimmy Carter decided to pull out the Department of Education to make it look like he cared about our kids in school. And as one of the kids in school at the time, I was 6 years old in 1978, I still take offense to the fact that Jimmy Carter thought he could sign a piece of paper, create a cabinet department, and say, look, I created a box chart. I care about our kids. No, box charts don't help educate our kids.
What about the ITT ruling this week, where the Department of Education said that ITT is no longer going? They will no longer accept federal grants and or whatnot. So ITT is pretty much out of business. It's no longer, you know, it's always been a sham school, and now they're running it out of business because they've been taking money from kids who whatnot. Now the Department of Education did that.
Assuming that actually is a good thing, and I'm going to just put that argument to one side, are you really telling me that a pre-1978 Department of Health, Education, and Welfare would not have had the power to do something similar? Are you really telling me a Department of Justice in the 1970s could not have done something similar? Are you really telling me we need a whole gigantic box chart dedicated to the Department of Education for that to happen? No, we don't. Well, I'm sorry.
The point is,
we don't. This is an example of a civil service that has grown too big and that has become too compartmentalized and too siloized. And frankly, one of my favorite presidents, Ronald Reagan, contributed to the problem by creating the Department of Veteran Affairs, which we now know to be a complete, utter disaster because it was pulled out of the Department of Defense, but, which for all its flaws, and I know it has some, had at least some sort of accountability that that the DVA does not have. I refuse to believe that we need a cabinet department simply to tell ourselves that we care about kids. That is a Humphrey Appleby way of dealing with things, and I reject it wholeheartedly.
I am not
Humphrey Appleby,
saying,
Minister.
I'm not saying that we can't get to a point where we could amend, collapse, or totally reform an organization. But what I'm saying is this, is that when you give a child an allowance of $20 a week, they get so used to that $20 and you knock it down to 10 just like that. It's the same thing. You cannot take a department that large that has so much of a structure and just wipe it out with no plan, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, let me ask just to be clear, DJ, is the plan to abolish it or to roll it back in with a revived HEW perhaps?
I would say I would call it consolidation, because I think it can be done more efficiently as an HEW department. The other thing I would say, Emily, is you are holding Johnson to a standard that you are not holding to Trump at all. You are saying, "Oh, Gary Johnson says he wants to do this and he has no plan." Do you honestly believe Donald Trump actually reads any of the plans he has actually put out? Do you think he actually knows what they are? We know that he doesn't actually know what his immigration plan was, because he's been veering off it for the better part of a year, and now he completely abandoned the thing. What he says on taxes varies from day to day. What he says on judges varies from day to day. In fact, getting onto the second issue, the fact that Gary Johnson has specifically said he would prefer justices who would want to allow the states to continue to protect life as much as they can under limited circumstances in the current post-Casey world, as opposed to Donald Trump, who has said he would appoint as judge anybody up to and including his own sister, who would probably overturn Casey and go all the way back to the pre-Casey Roe versus Wade days. Okay, is Gary Johnson perfect? No, he is not. But Gary Johnson has a record of giving pro-lifers space to save a large number of children. Donald Trump doesn't have that history at all, and you know it, because you've criticized him for it on this very program.
So then tell me this, though, and I am picking at Gary Johnson because he's not going to get on the debate stage. And if he does, he has no shot of becoming the president. So that's the bigger issue here. Donald Trump is not perfect, that's for certain. He's just slightly more palatable to me than Hillary Clinton, and that's where that sits. However, here's what the reality is. If Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton get elected, they will have a Congress that will be there to work with them, support them, or push against them. What do they do with Gary Johnson?
Well, actually, Gary Johnson has worked with a hostile legislature when he was governor of New Mexico as a Republican. He had a Democratic legislature for his entire two-term service. So he has worked with a legislature that was controlled by opposing political forces, and he has been able to work deals with them where he could, and where he couldn't, because they were crazy about government expansion, he vetoed them and stopped them. He does what any of us would do if we were in a similar situation. We would look to our political opponents to see, okay, where do we have common ground? We work together. Where do we not have common ground? We oppose each other and let the American people decide. As for the issue of my vote, I know a lot of people say that a vote for Gary Johnson is essentially putting a vote in the trash can. Not only does that not bother me, but I will tell you that if Gary Johnson was not an issue, if he was not a candidate, I would say this. Not only am I comfortable, quote, putting my vote in the trash can, but if Gary Johnson were not an option and all I had was Trump or Hillary, I would vote
for a trash can. I would write trash can in on my ballot.
Well, wait. You just said that because Wolfowitz said he may vote for Hillary, you're rethinking that. So clearly, unless I misunderstood
I did rethink it because I will acknowledge I admired Wolfowitz and said, okay, let me take a step back. Let me rethink the situation, Mrs. Clinton. Is this really a situation where the only differences, in my opinion, between the two candidates are within the margin of error? And that's overall. That's not obviously on particular issues they are very different, but in terms of the overall damage that they would do to the country, I genuinely believe it's within the margin of error between Clinton and Trump. I had to ask myself, okay, do I really think that, given what Wolfowitz has done? And I came back to my original conclusion that yes, even though Wolfowitz has endorsed Clinton, I still think in terms of overall damage they would do to the country, the difference is still within the margin of error, and the margin of error is not enough to make me choose one of the two of them, particularly when there is someone so superior to both of them in Gary Johnson. I have voted minor party before. I have no trouble doing it again.
I have one last question, then we can move on about this. Did anyone know if Wolfowitz was endorsing Clinton because she's like fabulous and awesome? Or was she endorsing Clinton because Trump is like, you know, terrible?
Okay, I think I can feel that. First of all, let's be clear. I don't think he endorsed her. I think he said he's thinking about voting for her. So that's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. Right. That's an incredibly huge difference.
Yeah, and the answer is it's because Trump is so awful, not because Hillary's so good.
And that's a huge difference, too.
Now, I want to jump in here.
I'm used to that phrase.
I've been unusually quiet for the last 10 or 15 minutes because, frankly, I'm still reeling from the realization that while I was graduating from college and driving across country to start my real life, DJ was learning cursive in first grade. So,
and I just want to say, Ken, before you continue, I was, frankly, unusually loud, and I want to apologize to the listenership for that one.
Oh, no, not at all, not at all. But I do have a question. I came from a pure public education background, always went to public schools. Everybody else here, public education people?
Oh, yeah, public education's the best.
But you came out of public schools?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went to a state school. I went to a state college. Okay. Public schools. I can sing you my fight song.
Okay, but let's talk about before college. Did everybody else go to public high schools and elementary schools?
Private elementary.
No,
I was
13 years at a private school and then William and Mary.
Okay, and Emily?
I went to public school. Oh, I went to 2 years of private school in eighth and ninth grade and went back to public school.
Okay. Well,
so majority of my life.
Okay. I mean, I was going to make the point. I thought the answer was going to be that we were all public school people, and I was going to say, look, public schools turned us out. How bad could they be? But obviously, you fancy pants people who went to private school kind of blew that for me. But I want to follow up.
It's okay. We turned out fine, Kevin. We turned out fine.
No, it's just us. It's just us, a working class.
But I think we're onto something really interesting here, and I want to like just throw out what we had planned to talk about for the next, you know, the rest of the show, and just focus on where we find ourselves now. Emily this week has apparently come to a new place in her voting plan. You know, I was never quite sure where you were, Emily. I kind of thought you were either going to sit it out or vote third party or something like that. What happened this week to make you decide that you're going to vote for Trump? I never assume that this is a final decision. I always assume that you or DJ, or for that matter, any of us, could change our minds before Election Day.
Were you hit on the head with a large mallet, or did you fall asleep?
I did fall. I did hit my head. A barbell hit me at the gym, so it could have been that. But so here, and I know Kevin is obviously going to feel a lot differently than I am on this one. So this isn't a slam on Hillary. It would be any candidate in her shoes. Is when I see so much of the news continually surrounding Hillary, you know what upsets me the most? And this is just from a quote-unquote basic voter perspective, standing back from how I know politics is and saying this, is that it's very, very hard for me to see that Hillary has so much surrounding her in negativity. Not that Trump doesn't, and that she doesn't address it. And
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Hillary has so much negativity and a news story breaking every day. And you know what? Some of it's fluff, some of it's not. But what bothers me the most about Hillary, at least, is that she doesn't address it.
Well, how she would she address it? How would the right candidate address these charges of you were pay for play at the State Department when, in fact, she wasn't getting the money? A charitable foundation that does amazing work was getting the money, and the people that got these meetings probably would have gotten these meetings anyways because they were eminently qualified to meet at the State Department level. And we can talk about emails, we can talk about Libya, we can talk about all these things. What is it? I mean, Greg, are you as mystified as I am when because we both respect Emily.
I just find it that, you know, it's like the Salem witch trials. I mean, we love to say this. Or my favorite one is, so Mrs. Clinton, when did you stop beating your husband? What is she supposed to say?
I don't think she stopped.
She's supposed to say
he likes it.
Trump is not right here. Trump is not right. When he will address things through Twitter, and that's not the correct space, unless it's something very minor. I don't think he addresses things correctly either. But usually I will give him credit, even though he is over the top and often very offensive to people. He addresses things more readily than Hillary does. And looking at it
more
from my
readily.
Democratic friends.
More readily. And I really think that we've come to a really interesting place here, because I'm sitting at a table here with four other people that I tremendously respect their intellects. I think you're all really bright, really informed. And I'm sure Greg thinks the same way that I do. We just can't wrap our heads around how, for all of her flaws, how someone can look at these two candidates and come to the conclusion that Trump would be by far the better president. This is a question that is coming up in every home, in every barbershop, at every bar across the country. People are wrestling with the fact that it's not just the jerk down the block has a Trump bumper sticker. It's people that we know that we used to think were like us who have this diametrically opposed vision of politics. And so I really want to mine this because, again, we all like each other. We all respect each other. I agree with Greg. I think that, frankly, you've somehow been brainwashed. But that doesn't mean that I think you're stupid. I don't. So I'm trying to understand this.
Hey, Maria.
So from a more basic perspective, I will never be pro-choice. I don't have a problem with morning after pill, with birth control. I'm not crazy. However, I'm pro-life for a reason. I was adopted. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't pro-life, you know, or someone else wasn't pro-life. So that's where I sit on that. And that is a Republican Party platform issue that I won't stray away from.
So you feel, is a big part of your decision that Trump, for whatever his faults might be, is much more likely to appoint federal judges and Supreme Court judges who would affirm the right to life, and that's a big issue?
That's a big part of where I'm at.
Okay, go ahead, Cliff.
Yeah, let's hear from Cliff.
There was a line somebody, I forget who it was, said, but it was the comment was, I don't know whether Trump will be right or wrong, but I know Hillary will be wrong.
But why?
And I
why?
Think that's
it's a
good
it's a great – it's a Johnny Cochran witty line. But why is it true? Why is Hillary wrong?
A good example is on judges. I know that any judge Hillary Clinton appoints is almost assuredly going to be – down the line with the currently four left-wing justices on the Supreme Court.
Okay, I'll give you that.
There are a lot of issues.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I won't.
And,
oh, okay.
I won't. I mean,
I'll get to that later, but I won't.
Okay.
You go ahead, Cliff.
Yeah, but no, but, you know, based on her, you know, her past record, her speeches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, over the years, she's going to support that line. I know that. There are a lot of people out there who will take the mystery – who will literally take a mystery box over Hillary Clinton. I think that is fair to say.
But why? That's what I keep coming back to.
It comes down actually to a logical question that pulls people in different philosophical directions. And the question is a zygote a human being? If you answer yes, your logic train puts you in one direction. That's the direction Emily, Cliff, and I would go in. If you say no, you go in an entirely different direction. That is, I presume, the direction that you and Greg go down on. What you are seeing here, Kevin, is a profound ideological difference with Hillary Clinton. It's not about the emails. It's not about Benghazi. It's not about the foundation. It is about the fact that Hillary Clinton has a position that is very, very important to Cliff, that is very, very important to Emily, and it is important enough for them to vote for Donald Trump because they do not want her with that position in the White House for an ideological reason. Now, I happen to think that they trust Donald Trump far, far, far too much on that reason. I grew up in New Jersey. I've observed Donald Trump for 30 years. I don't trust Donald Trump as far as I can throw him on this issue or any other issue for that matter. So that's where I gravitate to Gary Johnson, because while I don't agree with Gary Johnson fully on this issue, he is much more consistent than Donald Trump has been. But what you are seeing actually, Kevin, is, and you see it for me too when we talk about this, is, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, maybe everything about the Clinton Foundation is above board. Maybe the massive spillage at the State Department is not her fault. Maybe it's just the State Department being institutionally stupid. Frankly, I believe that. You know, maybe she had nothing to do with the Benghazi debacle. I could probably believe that too. But her record in office, the appallingly ridiculous reset with Russia, the rather terrible withdrawal, essentially, from Eastern Europe in 2009 and 2010, which is now being reversed. Her voting record in the United States Senate, where she has cast a lot of votes that Cliff and Emily and I would disagree with. We have ideological differences with Hillary Clinton. She would move the country in a direction that we do not want the country to go. And I fear it's been the biggest problem, really, with all of the criticism against Hillary Clinton that we have seen throughout her political career, is that people don't focus on that as much. They focus on her personal traits, they focus on character, they focus on ethics. The reality is, the one time that the Republican Party focused on where Hillary Clinton wanted to take the country was in the run-up to the 1994 midterm elections, and it was arguably one of the parties, when I was still a Republican, one of the biggest Republican Party victories of the last 30 to 40 years, because it was an ideological campaign. It was about issues. It was about where we wanted the country to go. For whatever reason, ironically, the whole Whitewater thing has distracted people, and it's distracted a lot of her political opponents, so that it's now become all personal instead of ideological. What you are hearing here are ideological differences with Mrs. Clinton. And those are things that are not talked about in the campaign nearly enough, so people don't notice them as much.
And let me just jump in here and make one other point, that while we focus on the judges, there are a huge number of other appointments at departments like Justice, HUD, etc., where these people have a lot of quasi-lawmaking power, and you know, that can spill into everything from, you know, forcibly integrating neighborhoods like we've seen in Dallas and that hasn't worked out, or, you know, other things where it's, you know, executive orders or equivalent agency rulemaking powers. We don't trust her with those powers because those do have the ability to change the track of the country in subtle and sometimes indiscernible at the time ways.
And for the record, I don't trust Trump with those powers either. That's why I'm voting for Johnson.
I'm not saying that I trust Trump. I trust the Republican platform, which I believe in. So that's where I sit with that. With Hillary, I'll say this, is that if I were a Democratic strategist, because I've done this a little while, eventually she cannot continually to ignore her base, because I have a ton of friends that are Democrats, and they're young, they're my age, and they have a distrust of her. And they're looking for answers instead of the issue being kicked down the road. And so to take some of those Democratic millennials, and they're not going to vote for Trump. That's not an issue. But they may vote for Johnson because they don't feel like they're getting the answers that they'd like to hear.
Well, the good news is that we still have, what, like 64 days?
Nope, 72.
72, Labor Day. We still have 72 days to change your mind, Emily.
We got
some time. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah,
you know, we're pretty persuasive guys.
We may have 70 some days until the election, but I think we're getting to the point that we have to wrap up for the evening. So don't forget to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Post our link on your timeline so your friends can find us. And if you enjoy political debates and would like to be part of ours, join us on Facebook in our political discussion group, Open Fire. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. Until next week, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.